More of The Truth with Sherwin Hughes is next on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
I don't know why my music ain't playing. Is that my music? Oh, there it is. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Hour 3 of The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. I hope you're doing okay. Let's talk to a patiently waiting Brandon. Hi, Brandon. How are you?
I'm good. Yourself?
I'm doing all right. What's on your mind, Brandon?
I had two comments. The first regarding the recession.
Yeah.
While I do agree that, you know, the economy is in a recession, I think our current financial outlook is more of a K-shaped economy. And what that means is, you know, higher income individuals, they see their assets and wealth continue to compound and build. And it's really lower income individuals who are feeling the brunt of inflation and things like that. I mean, if you look at luxury spending, you can't get a G-Wagon right now. You can't get a Lexus truck right now. So, you know, luxury spending is doing fine. It's the everyday person that's complaining about eggs. And then I also wanted to go into the Water Street, you know, blockade.
Yes.
I think it'll have a chilling effect on that bar district. You know, almost everywhere where we've seen sort of additional impediments to using that space, people just go to other areas. You know, Milwaukee has a tremendous amount of bars per capita. I'd also like to say that they have a very large police presence, and if they're unable to kind of maintain and keep that area safe, I think it speaks to maybe just poor policing strategy, poor political strategy. Too many of our alders think that the problems like crime and criminals, you know, are confined to a aldermanic district, and it just doesn't work that way. The folks that are causing problems downtown are the folks that are having problems uptown. So, you know, there needs to be a connected effort in how we see all of these things fitting together. Just putting up a fence is not going to solve really that issue. They're going to move to another area nearby, and they're going to cause chaos there. And lastly, we've got police that are able to monitor their girlfriends and their exes, you know, via these flock cameras. It makes no sense to me that we're not able to have a better catch rate on individuals who are bad actors with all of the technology that is at their disposal. So it's hard for me to believe that there's not a better way but for putting up RNC-like gates.
All right. Very thoughtful commentary, Brandon. Right. We appreciate your call.
Thank you.
All right, then, Brandon. Brandon hit on all cylinders. I like his reference of a K-shaped economy. I use that reference a little bit differently. So think of the letter K laying flat. So you have the line of the K is horizontal, and then you have like that V, which is the V shape of the K. That means that we'll see all-time high stock market and stock prices, which we saw. Boom, the stock market absolutely plummets and it drops. And then boom, it shoots right back up again. That is more of an accurate description of a K-shaped economy. And he's right. Luxury spending has exploded because people at the top are making insane amounts of money. Here's the problem. You cannot base your entire economy, your entire GDP, on very, very wealthy people spending a lot of money. And they're spending billions, if not trillions, right? They're buying private planes and all sorts of stuff. That cannot support an entire economy. It can, like, temporarily, but overall, we do need people who are the bottom 95% of income earners to spend money as well, especially on consumer goods. You know, I think that there are people that would get used to fencing on Water Street, and Brandon said, oh, they'll go somewhere else. Where? Where are they going? Go to Brady Street, going to see the same fencing. People will get used to it. And also, if you're downtown for a Bucks game, Or if you're downtown because you saw a show at the Marcus Center, at the Riverside, at the Paps, if you're in the Third Ward because you went to something at the Skylight Theater, you're still going to get food and to go grab some drinks in those other entertainment districts. And if the area is gated and you know that there are no guns because they're metal detecting for all the guns and maybe people got to pay a little bit of money to get inside the gated area, people would feel safer. And money needs to feel safe. Like, people won't spend their money where they don't feel safe. Also, we got to stop thinking the police are going to solve all this. I want less police on Water Street. Back in the day, the beat was two cops and they would just walk up and down Water Street. There was no police barricades. There was no squad cars blocking the street. It was two cops that were just walking around on Water Street. Do y'all know that we have a homicide problem in this city? We got a violent crime problem in this city. We have an aggravated assault and battery problem in this city. If we have a whole bunch of cops on Water Street, that's not where they're supposed to be. And I was telling my producer this a little while ago, and we can flood the area with police officers if you think that's going to stop them kids. Because even if you have, let's say you got 50 cops, which would be insane, you'll have 500 people. What are 50 cops going to do? You might have 1,000 people. What are 50 cops going to do? And so if we believe, like, oh, if we just have a bigger police presence and we put this on policing, somebody's going to get shot, a woman's going to get raped, somebody's going to commit an arson, and we won't have the police officers to respond because they're sitting around on Water Street babysitting somebody's children. There need to be less police. So meaning if we can create some kind of a safety perimeter where you don't – maybe you have a cop inside the perimeter. You have two outside. So the rest of those police – and remember, we have far too few police as it is. By state law, we need to have at least 1,650 police officers. We're nowhere near that. So if we are under the amount of police officers that we need already that's required by state law, and we take a – higher percentage of this lesser amount of cops and station them on Water Street, some of y'all's crimes ain't getting solved, and no flock cameras won't do it all. Let's talk to Al. You're on 101.7 The Truth. How are you?
I'm doing good. $500 tickets. And the mama gonna get $1,000 ticket because you have a guardian till you're 18. If the ticket is not paid, that child goes to jail for 6 months. If you file bankruptcy of any kind, it doubles. We don't have time for that. No. I'll be slapping tickets like Sodom and Gomorrah at an after set where they got nothing but Parmesan and cocaine. Ticket that ass out. They know how to show up and walk down the street with a butcher knife when somebody told their kid not to do. So you can pay that ticket today, goddammit. How about that? Number two, Chad the Builder. Chad the Builder, to me, gives me Nasty Pig vibe. If your producer could be so kind, put a picture of a banana or a vanilla cone with chocolate on it. See, a lot of people like Chad, who's real racist, they're usually Nasty Pigs, okay? Because, you know, he used to get pegged by his black girlfriend. But, see, a lot of racist men.
He sure did.
A lot of them racist men like the warmth of the man's seed when they feel the head spin past the second ring. Or let me say it in an educational purposes way. Prime example, if your producer is with his girlfriend and he ejaculates, she say, don't pull out. Because she want to feel the galaxy and the warmth of his seed. Chad the Builder is going around because he right now, he's upset. When he should have just took $600 and gave them to one of those black men and say, put that big gorilla stick up inside me and I want to feel the warmth of your seed. Because most racist men who always be on that racist nonsense be the main ones being a nasty pig toilet dumpster for the black man ejaculation, because it's about the warmth and the penetration of the mental vibration. So that's the only reason that's going on. But yeah, all you got to do, $500 tickets, mama get $1,000 ticket, daddy ain't around, we won't find him, slap him on one. And then if the ticket is not paid, the son or daughter go to jail for 6 months, put them in some rehabilitation thing. If she file bankruptcy, that ticket will double. But don't get upset about Chad the Builder, because he's a fairy. You know, he just want to spread that bussy up in the telly. You hear me? You probably want to play Sherry for him, or that song Jig Entertainment, telly. He just want to spread it. He's just having some frustrations. Now, y'all have yourself a good day. And make sure you put an extra sour cream on that taco. Extra. Bye-bye, y'all.
Jeez.
Bye, Al.
I don't have a girlfriend, by the way.
There's a black woman who approached Chud the Builder while he was looking for victims, I guess. And he admitted to knowing her and admitted to their relationship, because he's filming while he's walking around downtown Nashville. And she basically came up to him and cornered him. And was like, yeah, dude, I know you're not racist. You used to let me peg you. And like he didn't deny it. So usually with those kind of people, it's always some like they're torn. They have this cognitive dissonance because they hate how much they love black men. And it bothers them so much because everything they have been taught about us should make them hate us more. And they're trying to deal with the fact that they love us so much, but they're supposed to hate us. And Al is 100% right. They have these desires and these urges for us because let's be clear. Sexuality just exudes from the black man's soul. And it ain't just women that's attracted to it. And they feel so awful. And a lot of them actually are in the closet and gay. And so you have to do things to make it seem like you aren't gay. And so if I really hate these men that I love so much, if I hate them and if I call them names, then nobody will think or know that I'm secretly in love with them. That's a lot of times it's just this projection. Like they hate the fact that they feel this way. So I gotta hate you, black man, because you make me feel this way. I love you. I want to smell your cologne.
Side note, you know there are photos of Chud the Builder on the internet because he is a former femboy, if you know what that is.
Pretty self-explanatory. So then there you go. We just explained it. But the whole thing with him is just I guess I was disappointed by the reactions of black men that get called the N-word by a white guy. I think that's my whole thing with him. I'm not trying to have some like grand philosophical analysis of the situation, because I know that we used to kick white boys' butts if they called us the N-word, and they didn't do it anymore, and then everybody just went on about their business. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. I'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com. More of The Truth with Sherwin Hughes is next on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.
A recession in the United States would hit Wisconsin in a very direct and visible way because Wisconsin's economy depends heavily on manufacturing, consumer spending, agriculture, tourism, construction, and state/local government employment. When people lose jobs or fear losing jobs, they spend less money. When people spend less money, businesses make less money. When businesses make less money, government collects less tax revenue. When government collects less tax revenue, services get cut. That cycle can become especially painful in Wisconsin because counties and municipalities rely heavily and sometimes solely on state aid and shared revenue from Madison. How Wisconsin gets hurt during a recession. So this is me predicting and projecting into the future. If we are, in fact, either in or heading toward a recession because prices are still going to go up. Spending is going to go down. Corporate layoffs are going to continue to go up. More layoffs, less people working, less income tax revenue at both the federal and the state level, less state revenue, less sales tax revenue, less funding to counties that provide counties the ability to offer services to people who are oftentimes impacted by that recession. It's a crazy cycle. Manufacturing gets hit first. Wisconsin is America's most manufacturing-dependent states. Major industries include machinery, auto parts, paper products, food processing, heavy equipment, and industrial tools. Companies slow production quickly during a recession because businesses and consumers stop buying durable goods. This means layoffs at factories, warehouses, trucking firms, suppliers, rail and shipping operations. Even workers who keep their jobs often lose overtime bonuses and hours. Wisconsin was hit hard during the 2008 recession because manufacturing employment collapsed nationwide. Unemployment rises. When unemployment rises, fewer people pay Wisconsin income taxes, fewer people buy goods subject to sales tax, more people need public assistance. Wisconsin relies heavily on income and sales taxes for state revenue. Individual income taxes alone make up a major portion of Wisconsin's general fund revenue. How come none of the gubernatorial candidates are talking about this? I listened to a couple of the candidates. Well, Joel Brennan said that Wisconsin's not ready for a non-white governor, so there's that. But it's almost like when they're talking about their campaign platforms as far as what they want to do and what they prioritize, if they get elected governor, it sounds like they're running in a different state. The immediate need right now is shielding Wisconsin and Wisconsin industries and workers from an economic recession. That should be the conversation. Assuming that there won't be any productive economic policies coming from the federal government, because Trump will let this country burn before he works with the Democratic Party that is going to impeach him, because he's going to take that personal. Because like Brandon said, very wealthy people are doing fantastic. If this nation falls into recession, do you think Donald Trump even cares? He is perfectly fine. He's got countries giving him jets. I wish the country would give me a jet. Foreign countries, if you're listening, it doesn't even have to be a big one. Let me see. The G550 is nice. I'll take that. I don't need a 747. I don't need a Boeing. Too much maintenance. Boeing is too big. Give me a G550. You know, like a 14 to 20 passenger G550. That's fine. Because I'll accept. I wish one of y'all would tell me to turn down a jet from a foreign country. I'll fly right over your house. I'll talk to somebody who's never going to fly in my private jet. What do you want, Bob?
Sherwin, how you doing? Listen, you know, it seems like you're eager or anxious to tase somebody, because you said when you get off the air, I'll tase somebody. So look,
Bob,
I'm
don't give me any ideas, because you'd be the first one.
I'm sending a few. Huh?
Don't give
I'm
me any
a
ideas.
Few psychologists. No, I'm sending a few psychologists down there. Because I shoot this policeman that haven't tased nobody, haven't shot nobody, for as much as Dr. King has probably worked 29 years. But you seem so anxious to tase somebody. And, you know, so we got to get these psychologists in to, you know, make you slow down. I know a couple. So they'll be in sooner or later. You know what I mean? It's only one more question I had to ask you. I mean, it's not the time, but
it's never the time. It's never the time. What's the question?
I need to know. That very articulate woman that you were supposed to go out with last weekend, you know, did you go out with her? Did you talk to her?
No.
Is she still? No. You didn't?
No. I decided not to. That's not a good look.
Sherwin, if she's 30 or up, you talk to her. if she's 30, if she's under 30, you know, that's on you. I gotta be cool with that. And then if she don't have no kids, you can have a kid with her. You know, you're young enough. You're not young, but you're not old either. You're mid-age. You know, you can't find no woman like, look, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to get off. When you get my age, I had a wonderful era. But that's the only thing that I miss. Seeing these real pretty young ladies, and I can't talk to man one of them because I'm too old. It's the only thing. So don't get my age, and then you can't hardly talk to none of them. Because, you know, and they're so pretty and look nice and they do themselves up just for men to look at them and sometimes for themselves. And other than that, sir, and I will talk to you later, sir, with your aggravating tasing behind.
I love the poorly educated.
Not only would I tase Bob, I'd bring an extra battery. You know, just... because I don't know if one jolt will do it. I'm just not sure if people, you know, their mind gets right when they ride that lightning. You can just see an instantaneous change in their behavior. Let me address the, because Al brought this up as well, writing tickets. If you give tickets to people that are loitering, and you absolutely can. And then Al even mentioned, well, you give the parents tickets as well. Maybe there should be some parental responsibility. I don't know if that's going to do any good because the parents in a lot of cases are already showing a lack of responsibility, and a ticket is not automatically and all of a sudden going to get a parent to change their mind. You give a parent a $500 ticket or a $1,000 ticket or whatever, they're not going to say, wow, I really need to take more time to spend with my child. I need to work with them and, you know, consider different types of discipline and maybe listen to what my child actually needs to become successful. A ticket is not going to do that. An example that I gave when we were off air is, let's say on any one particular night in the summer, the police issue, I'm going to do a realistic number, 50 citations to young people who are, and it could be old people too, I guess, out past curfew or if they're loitering or having an unlawful assembly, let me call it that. And they issue 50 tickets on Brady Street. They're starting to head into Bayview now because there was a street takeover in Bayview. And let's say they issue another 50 tickets, you know, people standing around and observing these street takeovers. So that's 50 tickets in Bayview. And then another 50 tickets that they may issue to just a bunch of people standing around smoking weed on Water Street after bar time. So that's 150 tickets the police can issue in a single night. That's a Friday night, okay? Saturday night, whole nother crop of people. Brady Street, Bayview on KK, because a whole bunch of bars and restaurants on KK. I'm just using these as examples because they're well-known landmarks in the city. And on Saturday night, everybody congregates on Water Street again. I'm talking about one of them warm summer nights where it's 85, 90 degrees at night and nobody wants to be in the house and everybody and their mama is out. And then the police issue another 150 tickets, 50 tickets respectively on each of those three in those three entertainment districts, okay? That's one weekend, it's 150 tickets. Let's do that every single weekend until the weather starts to get a little cold. And now, hell, it don't get cold till November. So let's just say 2,500 tickets were issued this upcoming summer, as we are predicting and projecting into the future. Do you know what that's going to do to the municipal court system? Remember, we only have three branches of municipal court. An additional 2,500 citations is an additional 2,500 court dates, considering the current backlog of court cases, we will inundate the court system to such a degree that those tickets may end up never getting paid because the court dates will be pushed out till the following summer. So that's not going to be a solution, because what will happen is somebody will say, oh, wow, that's a really good idea. We heard that on The Truth With Sherwin Hughes. Let's have the police just issue a bunch of citations. And they issue citations. They try that this summer. let's say the food trucks remain closed at 10 o'clock. They fence and they gate up Water Street and they do the ticketing. We got 2,500 or 3,000 new court dates at the end of the summer. Then we realize people that may have, you know, already scheduled court dates are going to get moved. They're going to get changed. People are going to be inconvenienced. You got to take time off of work because there's this influx of 2,500 new court dates split amongst three judges. And then come 2027, we're going to realize, wow, that was really stupid to issue all of those citations in 2026 because now we inundated the court system. We'd have to give more funding to the courts. We'd have to open up a different branches of the court. We'd have to do night court. All that would get more expensive. It's going to end up costing us more money. And then the city is going to be like, hey, we're broke. We can't fill the potholes. We can't remove the snow. And we need another tax referendum. Let's talk to... Actually, let me take a break. Because this one tends to be long-winded. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. We'll be right back.
You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. More of The Truth with Sherwin Hughes is next on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Tune into the award-winning 101.7 The Truth's Community Spotlight today at 3:57 p.m. We will be speaking with Nicole Lorino, the 2026 chair for March for Babies. She will discuss how March for Babies brings families and caregivers together to support healthier moms, stronger babies, and life-saving NICU care through the March of Dimes. Again, the Community Spotlight today with the March of Dimes at 3:57 p.m. on the award-winning 101.7 The Truth. Let's talk to Lisa. You're on 101.7 The Truth.
Good morning, Sherwin. It's only been 6 minutes and 56 seconds I've been on hold. Well, you do that to me all the time.
Oh, no, Lisa, that's nothing. If you're on hold for 6 minutes, that is, consider yourself lucky.
Yeah, I do. I truly do. But yesterday when I did call, my intentions, I did what I did because I do what you do. Since we tend to follow people, since you tend to hang up on me, I hung up on you. I had to say what I had to say, and that's it, because I know you're going to hang up on me anyway.
Lisa, why would you call and act like you a kid? Like, why would you call a radio show where we're talking about very important topics and call just to hang up on me? Come on now. Grow up.
Well...
And that is hung up on her. Well, like, what? Don't play with what we do here.
She's trying to flirt.
Yeah. I don't want to mispronounce this person's name. Daryl?
You got it right. You got it absolutely right. How you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you? What's on your mind, Daryl?
I'm all right. I actually have two things I want to talk about. First of all, that Chad the Builder situation. I am a little amazed watching those videos because I just can't believe that black folks is just allowing him to walk away scot-free. It amazes me. I can literally remember every time a white person has called me the N-word. And I can remember when we was down in Marquette and some white guy did it, and he still might be in the hospital. And this is about 20 years ago. So it amazes me that nobody reacts. I've even seen some guys shake his hand. So I don't know if it's a good thing or if it's a bad thing.
Yeah, I don't
know. You know, are we proving the point? Are we proving the point that we don't always fight people? But like you said, and like other people talk about, you know, we draw down on each other real quick for anything.
That's right.
I was watching a video where this brother got shot by undercover police in a gas station because he got mad at another black man who didn't say hello to him. He said, what's up to him? Guy said, I don't even know you. Why are you saying what's up to me? So he pulled out like a fake gun in the store, and there happened to be an undercover cop in there, and they shot and killed him. And it was a toy. It was a toy gun. But that just seems to be the energy with each other. So I don't know what's up there, Sharon. I'm still trying to figure it out. Hopefully somebody will bring our manhood to it, because it makes us look weak as a whole race.
And that's what he's trying to illustrate. And he's doing a very, very good job of that. Because my thing is, if you know what he's doing, because now everybody knows, like, he says it to try and get a response, either ignore it altogether and keep on moving, because then his content is less effective if he says it and then nobody pays attention to him. The problem is he'll say it to groups of African-American young men, and they threatening him. And they say, oh, yeah, 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 come back around here at 7 o'clock and say that mess. Like, they're engaging with him at the same time they're not doing anything. So if you're not going to do anything, don't even say nothing to dude. Because if you say something to him and start yelling and screaming at him,
right,
then you need to have some action behind that.
It makes us look worse.
Yeah, I know.
And I don't know what's up with the Gen Xers. I don't know what's up with them. It's like they don't get mad with things they should be mad about, and they get upset about things that don't even matter. I don't get it.
You and
me. The other question I did want to ask you is, do you know what the game plan is for us as far as the redistricting going down in the South? Are people, are we going to be boycotting? Do we have someone who's willing to put some political capital into this and say, hey, this is what we're going to do? Have you heard anything?
No. So I don't think there's a national strategy yet. So in the meantime, I think that those southern states, Mississippi in particular, Louisiana also, are going to have to take it on the chin until we do our next census. The good news is the next census is in about 3.5 years, where we do our population count and then maps are redrawn. Hopefully by then we also have a new federal legislature and we have a new president of the United States. I believe it's going to be temporary. Don't quote me on that, but we get to redraw maps and redo the entire thing every 10 years, and we're coming to the end of the current census cycle. And so when the next census cycle comes up, there's an opportunity to redraw maps. Here's the tough thing. The Democrats would be much more likely to draw fairer maps because they are being districted out of some of these states altogether. The Democrats need to hold at least a federal majority by the year 2030 when we draw those new maps. If that's the case, then what is happening in the short term will be reduced and remedied by new maps that will be drawn in 2030. But in the short period of time, I think that's why there's not a national strategy, because there's not enough time to put one together. Now, I looked at it a different way. Basically, the Supreme Court said, like, they didn't totally gut the Voting Rights Act. I think some people got a little overzealous in our explanation. It just means that you can't use race in drawing district boundaries. There will be a point in time where the white majority becomes the minority, and the brown majority of people will be able to use this same strategy and make sure that there are no majority white districts. So if we play the long game, ultimately this hurts the new minority in this country, which is going to be white folks. So we can take the pain in the short term. We can look at how we can redraw maps in 2030 when we have the next census, or you leave it as is, and you might have the state of California, if it's not there, it will be very soon, a majority black, brown, and Asian state. Imagine if there's no majority Caucasian district in California and every single state legislative district and congressional district in California was headed up by someone that was Asian, that was black, and that was Hispanic, and there's no majority white district, then New York would follow suit. Like, because that's what the future actually is. No more white people, and imagine no more white representation in Congress. This country might actually realize its full potential if that day ever comes. So we'll see.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, what do you think about Texas? Do you think Texas has a good chance of becoming blue with all the diversity down there?
If people register and vote. Now, some of the diversity that Texas will show on a census are not citizens. That's the problem. They might, if everybody could be registered in Texas and actually vote, then absolutely they could be a blue state, no doubt about it. But you have a whole bunch of people, because we count non-citizens in the census. So the data and the racial makeup of the population in Texas might show 51, 52, 53% non-white. But if only a fraction of those people are actual citizens and registered voters, then the racial majority isn't going to make too much of a difference. But I know Texas has been flirting with it. We'll see how these next couple election cycles go. Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, I know I said only two questions, but I guess I have three.
That's all right.
Some people are talking about that the representation will kind of change, that we might have more white liberals representing, you know, largely African-American districts that have been gerrymandered in with other white districts. How do you feel about that?
I think that's worse.
Honestly, I would have to agree with you on that because I'm wondering, like, you know, with all this debate going on down in Tennessee, where is the guy that represents the district now, the Jewish guy? Was it Sean Cohen or something like
yep,
that?
Yep, he represents Memphis.
Yeah, where has anybody seen him? Is he alive? Does he have a pulse? He hasn't been out front trying to fight this. And that's why I think it's always best to have someone who understands you, understands the community, represents you.
Here's the interesting thing about that. So I actually have a personal connection to that congressional district in Memphis. It used to be the 9th. I'm not sure if the district number has changed because my cousin was considering running for Congress in that district. Ultimately, he didn't pull the trigger on his congressional run. But here's the thing about Representative Cohen, who has no business representing Memphis whatsoever. But voter turnout is so incredibly low. The handful of white folks, and especially the Jewish community, because Representative Cohen is Jewish, they vote in a high enough number to outpace the African Americans that live in the greater Memphis area that live in the 9th Congressional District. Now, I'd imagine Representative Cohen is going to be very, very quiet, because here's one thing that we know for sure. The Republicans have an affection for Israel. And so if the Republicans have districted out black representation, and we have nothing but Republican-led districts in Tennessee, and then you have Representative Cohen who's still representing Memphis, because dude is going to be representing Memphis until he decides to quit, retire, or he dies in office, I think that he would actually be okay with the rest of his congressional colleagues, the rest of the Tennessee delegation, being Republicans, because those Republicans will support Israel, and so does Representative Cohen.
That sounds terrible.
But you ain't hear that from me.
That sounds terrible. Right. Oh, my gosh.
But I got to go, Darryl.
Man, I appreciate the conversation. Thank you.
Of course. Thank you very much. Yeah, we realized that an African-American running for Congress in Memphis, Tennessee, could not beat a white Jewish guy. And Memphis is blacker than Milwaukee is. But that's where we lag. We lag in voter turnout. You know, the number of people, and I try and call them out when they call, a lot of people will have great political ideas or suggestions, or they'll tell you what politicians should be doing, what they aren't doing. And a lot of those people aren't voters. That's why I've got such a short fuse when it comes to Lisa, because Lisa will chime in with all of her great ideas. And yes, she just called. I don't know why she would think I would answer her call again. But she'll have all these political ideas, but because of her religious beliefs, she doesn't vote. And here's what's crazy. She sounds like she wants to vote and would be a very informed voter, but she is allowing her religious beliefs to interfere with her political participation. Which to me is just like, I don't need a religion like that. If there's a religion that tells me that I can't vote on the future of my community, the future of my tax revenue, the future of the school district, the future of economic policy, if my religion is telling me that I can't participate in that, just for Sherwin Hughes' purposes, that's a religion that I don't need.
What's the religion?
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. I'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. More of The Truth with Sherwin Hughes is next on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Truth Nation, join the March of Dimes on Saturday at 9 a.m. for the March for Babies at Greenfield Park. Come together with the Milwaukee community to support moms and babies and be a part of something that truly matters. Hundreds have already signed up, and there's still time for you to join the walk. Every step helps support healthier pregnancies and stronger families, especially for those facing the greatest barriers to care. So grab your friends, bring the family, and show up. March for Babies this Saturday at 9 a.m. at Greenfield Park. Sign up now at marchforbabies.org. And if you've been renting and wondering if homeownership is even possible for you, Axe Housing is here to help. An Axe Housing coach will help you put together a plan, create a budget, improve your credit, and move step by step toward owning a place you can truly call your own. They've already helped over 4,000 families become homeowners, and many are paying a lot less than what they are paying for rent. So don't let where you are today stop your family's bright tomorrow. Start your journey at axhousing.org. That is A-C-T-S-Housing.org. Your legacy begins at home. All right, what did we learn today? A lot of y'all think we're in a recession. Think the governor is probably going to sign a proposal that spends down our state government surplus, which, unless they know a whole bunch of stuff that I don't know, and they probably do, why you would spend a surplus heading into a recession that most people believe that we are either in or heading toward, considering that when we have an economic recession, less people are working, that's less income taxes that are being paid to state government, less people are spending. That's less sales tax revenue that is created, meaning the state budget will be less. And I would argue that Milwaukee probably needs more money, more resources. We need to expand the services that we have. We clearly need more law enforcement. And if we go into an economic recession and there's less gross receipts coming into the state budget, then that's going to be ultimately less money for Milwaukee. That's less money for anti-poverty programs and programs for those who are unemployed. Because of that recession, that's why the surplus money could help fill in some of those gaps. It's very, very simple. Typically, the whole idea of a budget and the state budget process and all the different categories and line items is probably a 1,000-page document, which nobody ever reads. But I can very easily explain how spending that surplus now on minimal property tax relief, because here's the thing, we'll spend down all that money, and what am I going to see as far as a property tax reduction? $40? Whenever you get property tax relief, like, people need to know this. For the average property tax payer in the state of Wisconsin, it's maybe $100. And then you'll have the Republicans saying, oh, this is a fantastic thing that we did. We got the budget surplus money back in your hands. There'll be a $300 tax check for individuals. If you file taxes in 2024, you'll get $300. No additional paperwork will need to be filed. They'll just look at your 2024 state income tax filing. And then families or married couples would get $600, but then the surplus would be down to zero. So the additional money that we would need to supplement some of those services that are delivered by counties would all be gone. But, oh, look, you got a $600 check or a $300 check if you're a single filer. Such a bad idea. The Assembly Republicans would be considering this, and they are considering this, a win. Why we would want to give Assembly Republicans something to run on, and they should be losing their majority because they have not governed. But now they're going to have something to run on. Now, also keep this in mind. The direction that Wisconsin goes in come November is going to be decided by about 30,000 people. And if the Republicans can do just enough convincing, more like when they're running there for the re-election campaigns, they're going to say, hey, believe us instead of what you actually see out in the real world. No, no, believe us and what we're telling you as Republicans instead of believing your bank account. I'm going to say the most honest thing about me is my bank account. My bank account don't never lie to me. You ever go out with your friends and the vibe is right? You just out there kicking it. You buying food, you getting drinks, you out there at the spot, you hanging out, everything is beautiful. You see people you ain't seen in a while. Come on over here, come sit in our section, come get a drink, I got you. And you just having a good time, you ain't thinking about that money because them drinks is just flowing, you feeling good. The DJ is playing all your favorite cuts, you just loving life and you have the time of your life. That's one of those nights that you always remember, you know what I mean? Hanging out with your friends. Ooh, maybe you even met somebody. You met somebody new while you're out there hanging out. You wake up the next day, maybe in your bed, maybe in somebody else's. fully dressed, but one foot has no sock and no shoe on it. It's one of those kind of nights. And you're reflecting back on the evening like, oh, it's worth it that I lost a sock and a shoe. I had a good time last night. We were eating good and drinking good. And I saw people I hadn't seen in a long time. And I even met somebody new. You're like, I don't care. I lost a sock and a shoe. And then you get curious. And you're always a little nervous. Because you didn't keep track of what you spent the night before. Because you was out there in the moment. You was living your best life. Put it on my tab. Oh, you need another drink? Hey, another round of shrimp. Oh, you want some wings? Get you some wings. I got it. It's on me. Waitress, put it on my tab. Famous last words. And then that next morning, you want to do an inventory of, you know, what happened the previous night. You know you had a good time. And then you get to wondering. Well, what's my checking account look like? And you have a dollar amount in your mind that you think you spent. Now, remember, you can't recall every drink you bought. You can't recall how many wing platters and how many shrimp platters you bought. I mean, you bought a few. Then you had a couple of people that also took the liberty of getting a couple few more drinks, maybe a couple shots on your tab. It's all good. We out here living our best life. We in the moment. And you think to yourself, okay, I'll probably spend $100. I'm going to do my little, I'm going to call my banker. I'm going to look at the little website. I'm going to look at my checking account. I'll probably spend about $100. Because the amount of money that you think you spent is a gross underestimation. And as you're pulling up the website, checking your balance in your account, you're like, you know what? If I spent $120, that's okay with me because I had the time of my life. We was ordering wing platters and shrimp platters, and we was getting drinks. We was getting shots. You met somebody new. Ooh, you had a good old time. So if you spent $120, worth it to you. $392, your account is negative $15. That's honesty for you. Because that bank account is not going to lie. Thanks for listening. Hope you guys have a wonderful day. Please stay tuned for Kyle Wallace and Truth to Power.